Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Gunner on the text line, Joe Rex Road, says, with all the injuries, losing D-Hop, terrible right side of the line, special teams are atrocious. I think both Callahan and Levis deserve another go. There needs to be overall improvements. This from Gunner on the text line. What do you make of that?
Okay.
Because some people would read that and say, well, the reason you lost Hopkins is because you were bad and you traded him at the deadline. You had a coaching staff that evaluated right tackle and decided that Nicholas Petitfrere could be an option there. And the special teams, being atrocious, are part of the coaching staff. So your response there, if you're responding to Gunner's text message.
Yeah. Well, especially the last thing you said. I mean, yeah. There's no, like, I mean, they have totally unnecessary issues there. You know, the other stuff is it kind of comes down to, okay, so how many mistakes are you allowed to make before it's fireable? Like, we use the word, the term fireable, which I still, like, to me, fireable means you must be fired. But regardless, I mean, that's the question. I mean, right? I don't know.
It's fireable.
Yeah, fireable. But it's a, like, when people say a fireable offense, then that means, like, okay, you did something that you now must be fired for, right?
I think you did something that you could be fired for, right?
Yeah.
Let's get into semantics. It is
semantics. I've always taken that as, I've never heard of someone committing a fireable offense that didn't get fired.
Oh, I mean, Nathaniel Hackett committed a fireable offense his first game, right?
Well,
he just didn't get fired.
In my mind, yes. But really, he did. He did.
Exactly.
He just didn't get fired
just
right
later.
That day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, regardless, how many of these mistakes are forgivable or fireable? You know, like, everybody's going to make a mistake. I mean, look, any GM with a track record in this league, I mean, John Robinson is a great example. He had some incredible drafts, and he had a really good first few years, and then it got quite a bit worse. But you can go, you can go find any GM you think is great in the history of the NFL, and then go look at some of their drafts, some of their top, and it's like, oh my God, did you miss this one, right?
Oh yeah.
So is that what you are? Is there anything redeeming about the coaching and GMing of this team? I know some people right now are going to say, hell no. I mean, they're 3-10, they're sick of watching this stuff.
Right.
But is that true?
By the way, Keith on the text line says, every morning as I take the kids to school, they get to hear your 7 a.m. hour intro, and the kids both shout, another biscuit. Thanks, Joe. This is from Keith and now Juliet.
Nice.
Text line. Rex Road, influencing the mind of children everywhere.
Yeah. And I recommend sausage, egg, and cheese on it.
Santa in Portland. So far, it's clear, while both Callahans are likely good coaches, they cannot make great those that have little to no talent. This is from Santa in Portland on the text line. I guess my follow-up question with that would be, particularly on the Brian Callahan point, is that clear? Because, look, Bill Callahan's track record is what it is. We have gotten some of the, well, is Bill Callahan really that great so far this year on the text line? And it's like, okay, he's got a very long track record of success in this league. I'm going to probably lean towards more of this roster in certain spots, particularly at right tackle, being buns, as you would say, before I start blaming the coaching part of it. Now, one thing on the Bill Callahan front that I think is fair, you know, they clearly looked at right tackle enough to the point this year where they looked at Nicholas Petitfrere and he said, yeah, I can work with that, because they didn't address it. So, yes, I can work with that. So, if you want to blame Bill Callahan for that, that's fine. But is it clear that Brian Callahan cannot make those around him better yet? Like, I don't know that that's completely clear after 13 games as an NFL head coach.
See, this is where – so the coaching stuff in particular is where I will make the Detroit comparison. I mean, I think that's where it works, right? Because, I mean, hey, go back and look at those teams that Dan Campbell lost every freaking game with for a while. I mean, they had some of these guys who are now part of a Super Bowl, you know, contender, right?
Yeah.
So did he suck at doing that? How come he couldn't make them better then? How come in the first season and a half of him as a coach, he couldn't make anybody better and couldn't win any games? Now, obviously, he was making people better, and then they started winning games. Is there anything that we're seeing? The most important thing is Levis. Have you seen Levis get better this year?
I mean, the answer is yes, but the problem is he started so poorly.
Right.
Right? Like, he started worse than he was last year, so I don't really know what to make of that. Like, let me ask you this. Is the way that he has played overall since coming back from the injury, and I realize last game not very good, is the way that he's played overall since coming back from the shoulder, how much better is that than the ending point last year would be my question. I think it's probably better. Is it a lot better?
I wouldn't say that. I would not say a lot better, no. Yeah, so then you also get into, look, there are plenty of coaching and GMing careers that have ended because the quarterback dragged him down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's where it can get complicated. Do you want to blame these guys for not developing well enough, or is it just that there's some things, some limitations he has that you can't get around? They can't figure it out.
Right. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Philip to the program. Philip, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. I always enjoy listening to y'all in the morning.
Thank you.
But I was just calling to say, man, I don't think this team is as bad as a lot of people make it out to be. And I think the GM has actually put together a pretty solid team. I think it's just the quarterback. We can test it out with a theory. If you say we take Levis out and put in half or more than half of the starting quarterbacks in the league right now, I think the Titans are a legit playoff team. You can probably overturn four of the games we've lost with the Bears, the Jets, the Colts game, and then this past game. If we have better quarterback play in just those four games, even with the line and with the bad special teams play, we probably win all four of those games. And with all four of those games, that makes us a legit – we'll be in playoff contention with just those four games getting overturned. But with Levis playing as bad as he's played in those games, granted, the last game he didn't play bad, but he missed some plays that would have won us those games.
Yeah.
But just switching out one player shouldn't make a team that everybody calls in and says, oh, this team is terrible, this team is horrible. If you switch out one player, it shouldn't make a horrible team go to a playoff contention team. Just my opinion. But I think we got some pieces, especially on defense. We don't talk about how solid the defense has played this year. We really wasted a pretty solid defense. To say in the Jacksonville game, we only gave up one drive, and that was it. And they had two turnovers. When the Texans played them the week before, the Texans supposedly have a good defense, and they gave up just as many yards and two touchdowns with no turnovers. So the defense is really going to waste as well. And I just hang up and listen and get y'all opinion on that.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Appreciate it.
I think there's some fair points there, but I have some counterpoints. One is, like, 2 weeks ago we watched the defense just get completely, like, treated like an FCS team by Washington.
Yeah.
And also the defense, they have been solid. They got some good pieces. They seem to have this very unclutch thing about them. But, again, you know, I give the defense a break, because when you are playing under the weight of that offense, which I think maybe some of what Jeffrey Simmons said last week sheds a little light on,
yeah,
that's not easy. But also, I mean, look, I agree, like, there are definitely quarterbacks who would come in here better than Will Levis, or a lot of them who are better than Will Levis in the NFL, who would have won some of those games. So the record would look better. You wouldn't be – you might be a contender for a playoff spot. That's what the NFL wants. They want everybody to be a kind of – you wouldn't be a real contender. But also, the offensive line is still the worst part of this team. You know, Levis up and down, he did have four, I think, pretty good weeks before last week. The offensive line is the worst part of this team. It has been. They have not figured it out. And obviously they made some miscalculations with that that is just made it hard to evaluate Levis. So, I mean, I guess I agree with part of that, but not all of it.
Well, and here's the other thing. How many teams across the league could you go around and say, well, man, if you just had better quarterback play, you'd probably be in a different spot, right? Like, quarterback, that's why the quarterbacks get paid as much money as they get paid. Now, look, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with Philip there. Like, you can look at it. If Levis didn't just nuke the Chicago game, you're probably winning it, even with the blocked punt at that point. I mean, the Jets game, He's rolling the ball on the ground, the egregious turnovers.
But you still also give up the drive.
You also give up the drive.
It's not all him.
It's not all him. But, I mean, look, the quarterback touches the ball on every offensive play. They're going to be largely responsible in most weeks for how the game turns out. That's why they get paid $60 million per year.
Exactly. Again, I just keep going back to this guy. I swear, I'd love to see a season with Jared Goff here as the quarterback in this exact same situation. We'd all say, man, this guy stinks.
Make a trade.
Good job, Sean McVay. Got rid of that guy. Dead weight. I'm serious. Because some quarterbacks more than others have no chance if they don't have protection. He's one of those guys. Yep. Now, some guys are better than Levis at handling that.
Yeah, no doubt. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Check out Nashville's best deal this week. It's 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. 312 Pizza Company serves the best pizza in town, as well as Chicago-style eats like Chicago dogs, Italian beef sandwiches, and more. Check them out at 371 Monroe Street in Germantown, or order takeout online at 312pizzaco.com. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals to get half off a $30 gift card to 312 Pizza Company while supplies last. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's head back to our phone line and welcome in Michael to the program. Michael, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question about the offensive line. Is there any sort of precedent throughout the NFL where over multiple GMs, coaches, everything like that, personnel groups, of an offensive line being as consistently bad as ours has been over the past three, almost 4 years at this point? I feel like, just 2 years ago, the offensive line was a completely different set of people outside of maybe Dylan Raiden, but even then he was playing tackle as opposed to guard. I just really don't understand how the offensive line, with all the changes that have been made, is still this bad. Even when the Cushenberry was out and everyone was healthy, it was still not good. I just don't really understand how that's possible.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Michael. I mean, I would have to go back and look through – obviously everybody's organizational history there. I'm not overly familiar with the offensive line issues that the Arizona Cardinals have had. I can tell you this, the three-year run they're on right now of offensive line play is pretty difficult to believe. And to his point, you can't say that they haven't addressed the offensive line. We hear that a lot, right?
They've addressed it poorly.
Well, when are they going to address the offensive line? Well, they've addressed it. They've just done so incredibly ineffectively. Now, we'll see about Latham. I know Latham the last 2 weeks has had his problems, right? Like Latham, really the last 3 weeks, hadn't been all that great out there. So maybe that's you're hitting the rookie wall, you're running in some growing pains, whatever it is. I still largely feel good about him and what he's going to be as they move forward. But the last 3 years, I remember saying, hey, guys, well, don't worry, because it's not going to get worse than Dennis Daly. And then Andre Dillard showed up, and you're like, okay, it did get worse.
Yeah. First of all, I'm sure you're right. You're not going to find a whole lot that's worse, right? But offensive line issues, it's an epidemic. I mean, there's a lot of other fan bases out there that would say, hold on now. Let me tell you about my team. There's more bad than good. There's some different reasons. It's hard to find good offensive linemen. I think the lack of contact and practice, some coaches believe that that's a thing that makes it more difficult to have good offensive line play. You always have the scheme differences, college and pro, stuff like that. So there's a shortage overall. But no, between Daly and Dillard, and again, first round 2020 Isaiah Wilson, second round 2021. Dylan Raiden's third round 2022, Nicholas Petit-Frere. They're trying. They've been trying. First round.
Oh, by the way, there's probably another one coming.
First round 2023, Peter Skoronski. I mean, my goodness. So we're talking different regimes, but just in the range there is, well, we know one complete flame out, which is off the field stuff. And then you've got, pretty close to a flameout at this point with Petit-Frere. I don't think he's going to be a starting, based on what I've seen this year, a starting tackle in this league again. And then Radins has settled in as a, you know, a serviceable guard. But, I mean, he makes some big mistakes, too, out there for this team. And you can improve on that. All of them, all four of those players I just mentioned, certainly playing below their draft positioning.
Well, and then the problem with that is not only on the field is it just not up to snuff at all. And you end up just totally limiting your offense and what you can do. But then the problem compounds because you got to go back into the draft and fix it, right? Like, are you finding an acceptable right tackle in free agency this offseason if you're the Titans? Maybe. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like on December the 12th that I've really gone over and studied the plethora of options at right tackle in free agency. But most teams find their right tackle in the draft. So now when you miss on these guys the way that they've missed on them, you just end up having to dip your toe back into the pool and using draft picks on offensive linemen that could be used elsewhere had you hit on these picks before, and that has a trickle-down effect on the rest of your roster. And that's how you end up in situations like they're in right now where you're 3-10, and you look at the roster and you're like, eh, it's just not very good.
Right, and with free agency, again, going back to what I was talking about with the shortage overall, teams don't let good tackles go. Teams don't let good offensive linemen go. The Titans did. And that's one of those, you know, you can look back on John Robinson and Jack Conklin, and they decided, you know what, not going to pay on this one. We're going to draft. And, I mean, now Conklin's had injury issues, but my goodness, Conklin getting a second deal versus the run they've had there, you know. There's another kind of underrated, I would have to call it a mistake of John Robinson's tenure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem right now. And again, you look at the future, you're like trying to determine what you're doing moving forward here. Part of that is the eval of the quarterback. And people have thrown this out there, and it's a fair question. How much does the offensive line and the lack of protection factor into your evaluation of the quarterback? Now, I've thrown it out there, like you can't just make that excuse for Levis forever, right? Like, your job is to evaluate him even in the midst of what is a terrible offensive line. And is that a difficult thing to do? Yep, it is. But you also can't just let Will Levis be your quarterback for 4 years and say, well, we'll really start the evaluation when we really fix the offensive line. Like, it's not how life works in the NFL. But unfortunately, like, that's the cards that you've been dealt if you're Will Levis, and you're certainly not getting the cleanest evaluation of him. Regardless of what you think of Levis, I think we could all agree with that. Like, you're not getting – this is not Jared Goff. Like, the circumstances are not the same thing, and the protection certainly is not the same thing when it comes to your evaluation of the most important position on the field. You would like for that to be a spot where, yep, he's got a clean pocket most times. He's got good protection, and he's either good enough to deliver the football accurately on a consistent basis or he's not. And unfortunately, that's just not the set of circumstances that you're evaluating this quarterback with, fair or unfair.
Right. So, yeah, it's where it's not easy. It's, you know, you can always hypothetical, okay, like to call it a plug in this quarterback. Yeah, there's plenty of them who would do better than him. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that that he's a bad quarterback or doesn't have a chance. But it's just this the whole side of the ball has just been you know, betrayed by that issue. And
well,
it's still to me the number one issue. And I mean, how many guys do they have? Latham, I think, is going to be fine. Will he be like good, really good? I think he's going to be a guy who's going to start in the league. I think Skaronski probably too. But I mean, we already are looking at. So is he a bust? I don't know. That's a big word. But is he the 11th pick?
No.
Some things you'd rather do there, right? Yeah. But still, okay, so you have two young guys, and then how does Cushenberry come back from, you know, then you still had, to me, the whole right side, you got to try to get better at both spots.
Well, that's the thing. So how does Cushenberry come back, and also when? Like, when is he back?
Yeah.
So, like, are you having to look at that this offseason to, you know, make kind of a gap stop move there at center? And we all know that right tackle is going to have to be addressed this offseason in some form or fashion. Is right guard, like, are you revamping the whole right side this offseason? Is it just as simple as finding a dynamic player maybe in the draft at right tackle and you come back with the rest of the line intact? Like, I'd love to know what their approach is going to be on the offensive line.
And look, I did think absolutely that, especially like last year, like at Cleveland, you know, the whole Bill Callahan discussion just last year was one of those, my God, what is this guy? Is this guy Gandalf? I mean, they had crazy injuries. I mentioned Conklin. He's one of them. They were moving guys around, third and fourth tackle, stuff like that, and they were good. They played fine. They protected Flacco. They got to the playoffs. So, he needs to start paying off in acquisitions, in development, all those things. Like that's gotta happen next year.
No doubt. We'll be joined by Predators assistant coach Darby Hendrickson coming up next. Preds in action tonight, taking on the Stars. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Preds back in action tonight in Dallas, taking on the Stars. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Predators assistant coach Darby Hendrickson. Darby, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
We're awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, obviously, Darby, a rough stretch right now. You guys have lost eight in a row. You get past the two-goal mark the other night, get to that third goal, which Barry Trotz has talked about is really important for you guys as you move forward here, but you end up not getting the win. Just what's the message right now to this group with, you know, things going the way they are from a results standpoint?
Certainly challenging. And I would say in a positive light, you know, there's a lot of moments where we're doing the right thing. As a team, we feel good. You just mentioned it. You get the third goal, you get the separator. It's a whole different night. We have to hang in there. Obviously, in the big picture, it's nobody's happy. You come into the rink in the building when you're winning, it's fun. Everyone's in a good mood. When you're not, it's not. But within all of it, you got to stay upbeat. You got to stay positive. You really have to be dialed into reinforcing what is working. And that's a challenge we go through every day, is to keep that and find it today and build from there.
So for you guys, then how do you do that? How do you keep morale? Like how much are you talking with the guys about, you know, big picture things as opposed to granular things, you know, that you're trying to work on a daily basis? Yeah. How do you balance that?
Well, that's a good question. You know, obviously we have our team type meetings, but I say being in the assistant role, probably one of the most important things, your communication. And certainly there's things you're watching with players individually in their game, but it's a lot of one-on-one time with people. And there's parts of improvement that you need. There's parts of consistency that you need, but it's the communication part's the biggest, and getting feedback from players. Obviously you know, in the coaching role, you're trying to help them. That's your job. You're trying to help our team. But ultimately you're trying to connect with guys every day in terms of, you know, how they can get better and how they can help their team. And that's something that happens every day.
So Darby, I mean, the line kind of came together the other night with Nyquist being out with an illness, but we saw Forsberg, Stamkos, Marchessault together, particularly early in the game. I thought they looked really good. Obviously, a couple goals from Marchessault in that one. Do you feel like you guys may have found something there? What did you like about the way that those three specifically were operating?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the production, they had a couple goals. Marchessault, you know, having two. I think it was a decision we made with Stamkos a few games back to put him back in the middle where he's played wing most of the year. I thought he skated well in the middle. That whole line obviously had chemistry with the two, but you know, I think that's been one of our challenges, to find fits, find chemistry, find at least a pair, you know, whether it's a center and a winger that we can consistently stay with. That one was good. There was a lot of pace. But obviously, you know, you look at our whole, we need the four lines all to be going, but certainly that line, came up productively, and, we're hoping the same thing can happen tonight in Dallas.
And of course, you guys have been trying to find answers down the middle, and you know that's something for this franchise. You know that's been a long term thing. But I guess some of the thought on Stamkos has been, you know, maybe he's better off at this stage in his career on the wing. Do you feel like he can be a long term answer down the middle?
Well, he's certainly played center before in his career. You know, and I know when he came into training camp, he was open to both. He wanted some opportunity at center. You know, we put him more at wing, you know, throughout the start of the year where he's been most of his career, but can play center too. I thought he moved real well in the middle. That would be kind of my analysis, and I think our coaching staff would share the same thing. I thought his speed, even on the first goal, just pace, up the ice that led to Marcius Hult's first goal. He's behind the net, obviously made a great pass. I liked his pace through the middle. Hopefully, with O'Reilly and Nyquist being out, as they get back here and get closer, we can look at decisions, but I think Steve in the middle was real good.
So Darby, obviously you guys are running into the injury bug here on the defensive side of things with Yossi and Lazan and Carrier. So what have you made of some of the younger guys, Willsby and Blankenberg stepping in to fill those roles, and just kind of where are you guys at right now from a defensive standpoint?
Yeah. I mean, obviously those are key people. We know that, really good. Blankenberg and Willsby, I just really mobile since they came in. And Delgazzo, I thought, played really well for us for a long stretch there. When they came in, it was just to give, opportunity. What we wanted, some puck-moving type defenseman that Delgazzo was. Now he's back. I thought he played well last night. They've all been good. And I think, how we want to play, just the pace and breakout and passing, they've been real effective at that. And, really good, young, hungry guys who want to make it and be consistent here. And I think they've added very well.
Dallas, obviously a really good team. Been a tough matchup, for the Preds recently. What's the key here? And what's the potential payoff if you can get a win against a team like this on the road?
Yeah. When I say coming to this game for us, our start is just really important. Just our first 10 minutes of the game. Obviously when we have not had consistency, we've not had results, that start is so important that everyone's going, everyone's engaged. Obviously you'd love to score, but just our energy and as much as we can set pucks up and get to their zone, to make them defend, that's what we need to do early. There's ebbs and flows of the game. We know that. They got a pretty balanced group. They also have some players out like us. Tyler Seguin is out. But just really our first 10 minutes. And whether that's being physical, whether that's getting in the net, all these type of things, like our mentality, our mindset right out of the gate has got to be strong, focused, and direct.
Well, Darby, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us today here on the program, and good luck tonight against Dallas. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Preds assistant coach Darby Hendrickson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Preds taking on the Stars tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. I will have your pregame at 6 o'clock here tonight on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. So get excited for that.
I'm excited.
You should be.
I am.
I'm excited as well. Look,
I'm excited that you're excited.
Well, look. Tonight is game 30 for the Predators, right? So you're reaching the point where, traditionally we would start to be entering the discussion of, all right, we're getting to the middle point of the season, kind of games 30 through 60 that some people refer to as kind of like the dog days that you kind of got to drag yourself through. You're not close enough to, the end of the tunnel yet, looking ahead to the playoffs, but, still very important points on the line. Look, you've won 7 out of the first 29 games. I mean, I'm really interested to see, particularly with their injury situation, who comes out and shows that they got a little bit of fight in this thing. Like right now on defense, I mean, they're banged up. We'll see what Yossi's availability looks like. He wasn't able to come back the last two periods the other night. There's no update on him after the game. Andrew Brunette did talk about like young guys having an opportunity here to step up, which tells me that maybe he's not going to be back tonight, but we'll see what happens on that front. But you get your down Yossi, Lazan, and Carrier, and you waive Fabro. So think about that coming into the year. I mean, it's four of your guys that you're counting on coming into the year that are just not available to you right now. So, look, I think Willsby's been good. I really like what I've seen from him. I don't think that Blankenberg is like some long-term answer for them. They got Stasny that's back in Milwaukee.
Which is good to see.
We'll see what that looks like for him later this year. I'm sure at some point he's going to be up. Delgazzo, I think, has struggled last couple of times he's been out there. Last game, kind of different for everybody. He ended up playing 20 minutes. But when Yossi goes down the first period, I mean, just got shuffled. But right now, their defense is in a rough spot. And you're taking on a Dallas team tonight that's, even with Sagan out, has a lot of firepower.
Yeah, but I think you're dead on. It's like who's got some fight, you know, some, you know, you want to see just some nastiness even. You know, it's like if you're going to, I mean, basically you just mentioned the 30 games, so just win 20 of them. If you win 20 of them, you wouldn't be in the playoffs at that point, I don't think.
Probably not.
But you'd be like, you know, you'd be back in the land of the living. Yeah. You'd be in the hunt. Just win 20 of 30. But yeah, some fights, some nasty, some I'm sick of this crap.
Yeah.
I think fans want to see more of that, right?
What do you make of the idea of playing Stamkos at center?
Well, I mean, I guess I was kind of the mind that, you know, at this point, you know, he's better as a wing. That's a lot to put on a guy at his age.
Yeah.
You want that shot to be a weapon for you. But, hey, man, they're so strapped there. If he can handle it over a period of time, sure.
Right now, he's their best option at center. It is what it is. Like right now, he's the best option they got at center. It's particularly with Ryan O'Reilly being out. But look, even quite frankly, when he gets back in, I'd still consider it. Like I know he is traditionally, especially the last few years, he's been almost exclusively on the wing. I understand that. I mean, right now you got to find some answers somewhere. I'd probably give it a longer look just to see, and then if you don't feel like it's working at some point, then move him back. But I'd give him a look. That center for the next little bit here.
100%. Yeah, and then the question, you know, I didn't expect that, you know, I'd get like an answer like, yeah, after about 15 games, that'll probably be about it for him, and then we'll have to. But that's right. Can he handle that load for?
Right.
If he can, well, I guess I'd ask, why didn't you do that earlier? But yeah. Whatever. I mean, at this point, you're trying to find anything you can find.
We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Take more of your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Titans and all things NFL and maybe even a little college football with Charles as well, with Bill Belichick going to be the head coach at North Carolina. Interested to get Charles' thoughts on that. All that coming up, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
At this point,
they know,
I hope
they
not.
Know some weak rant is coming. If you want rainbows and sprinkles and ice cream and pom-poms, you are in the wrong place. This team is horrific.
Shame, Will Levis. Shame.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program.
What, do you think I was ranting about Kaharsky today? You just, Keezer loves Kaharsky so much, wishes that we could have him at all times.
He does.
It's just hysterical.
You need to hear that voice.
No, it's hysterical that he just jaws at you the whole time and you have no clapbacks at all.
No clapbacks?
Not really.
Wow. I think he's got several clapbacks.
He's coming at me about the cameras and everything, and I always make a comment.
Do I need to go find audio? I have no clapbacks?
Sometimes Joe takes clapbacks to the extreme.
I'd say sometimes I go too far.
Yes,
that
certainly.
Bald mother. No, I'm just kidding. and sorry for making the bald comment, Robbie.
Yeah, what's going on over here?
Lord Paul DeMore.
All I've got is my lettuce. Yeah, that's basically all I've got.
It is beautiful.
Going for you. Thank you. So today, I kind of keep an open mind. I'm going to tell you what. Today for my rant, and this would be, Karski would really rip me on this one.
He would.
Oh, you don't even have your own rant, huh? But I got to say, I want to give a shout out. I will. We're going to make this our own a little bit because – even though we've talked about it a lot, I think as we march through this last month, it's really worth hammering this point home. You can't fire the owner, but you can try to hold the owner accountable. And Amy Adams Strunk needs a talk. I mean, it's enough of this. Great. You know, we make fun of Jerry Jones all the time, and it is incredible. It's just way overboard. I mean, he has his, you know, his presser after the game is more important than the head coach's presser after the game.
I will get better radio people to ask better questions.
Yeah. And then you got that stuff. And he's always, so he's everywhere. It's too much. But, man, you don't have any ambiguity about how he feels. And different owners do it different ways. When you're this bad and you've made all these moves And you just got a bleep ton of money to build your new stadium to continue to line your pockets, you need to speak. You need to take questions, and you need to speak to the fans. And I want to just – I am inspired by this. I want to give a shout-out to our friend Gentry Esses, who had a fantastic open letter to Amy Adams Strunk in the Tennessean today. This is what – Gentry has a great job. I've had that job. I love that job, and this is the job of the local columnist to hold people's feet to the fire when necessary. It's necessary now, and this is a fantastic job by Gentry. I'm going to read a couple of little segments. There's a lot of it. You got to check it out.
Tennessean.com.
Check out Tennessean.com. But let me just read this. Unfortunately, as always, there's only public silence in the Titans owner about everything. No thoughts, no support, no criticism, no plan, no explanation. No visible leadership from this franchise other than Callahan. No real reason for Titans fans to feel anything other than disillusioned by an offseason's worth of effusive positivity that is proof fiction, not fact, calling into question the competency of the leadership involved. And, you know, going into, again, the whole, and this is where it is, you know, the corporate culture, the collaboration stuff, again, the confusing move to, okay, you fire Vrabel, you're keeping Carthon, but you're also elevating Brinker over Carthon, which,
right.
And again, I know they've tried to explain that, but it's, she didn't, and, you know, it's enough. It really is, and I understand, you know, look, like if you're Amy Adams Strunk, I'm sure that sitting in front of the assembled media here, you say whatever you want about soft national media. I'm sure it doesn't sound fun. And, you know, like
Paul DeMort is lurking.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, look, this is fair. It is fair to ask this, and it's fair for her to look at this and say, you know what, I need to come out and speak to the fans who I'm trying to keep as customers. We talked yesterday about the stadium, and I think Paul, it's fair. Like they're going to sell, they're going to have people in that place, they're going to make the money, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, it's not like there's like this panic, like you're just going to completely lose your fan base. But I think you're losing some people here. You're getting some apathy here, and franchises, you know, I mean, there's some that have these generational fandom. Again, I'll go back to the Lions. Those people are just sitting there waiting for anything to happen, and then they it's amazing, the response. You know, this is a much younger fan base, and it's just so disappointing given all of the good things about her early years as controlling owner. And it wasn't like she talked all the time, but she talked sometimes.
Yeah.
When they drafted Jeffrey Simmons, she sat there and she took questions about it. She talked about it. And where has that gone?
Yeah. Times are tough now. And sometimes as the person in charge, you got to speak when times are tough. And I know that that's not in her comfort zone, clearly. Otherwise, she would have done it by this point. But I do think at some point you got to look around and say, you know what? Like, the fans, my paying customers, they deserve to hear from me on occasion. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, Jerry Jones. Like, you don't have to have a weekly press conference. You don't have to get up there with, you know, 35 microphones in your face after every game. But, like, every now and then, it'd be nice to do that. I'll tell you one line that I really like, or one kind of graph here that I really like from Gentry's story. You know, he talks about the collaborative success of the Lions and trying to emulate that if you're the Titans. He says, quote, "The Lions aren't winning because of collaboration. They're mostly winning because they've drafted better than everyone else, and especially your organization. It takes players. Your Titans don't have enough good ones." Amen.
Yeah.
We can create all the buzzwords you want to around here. At the end of the day, that's what it's about in the National Football League.
And, you know, I hate to do this, but since we're just – this rant is just praising Gentry, I'll read the end of the column. I know. Is that bad? Is that wrong for me to read the end of the column?
It's pretty good.
All right, I'm going to read it. Sorry, Gentry. It says, "End of last season's finish, you deemed that unacceptable. Okay, obvious question. If that was unacceptable, what's this season been? I hope Mike Keith gets to ask you soon."
Oh, boy.
And that's, again, you know, look, hey, I'll say this. I'll take that, I'll take the one-on-one with Teresa Walker, anything. If you don't want to do the whole press conference thing and take all the questions, you got to do something. I mean, and I would hope that that's the plan to some extent when this season ends. I freaking hope so. I hope someone's listening over there, because it's absolutely shameful if not. Another thing he brought up here, which I hadn't even thought about, was if they do clean house, they're going to send Levis up there to answer the questions?
Well, your thoughts on the general manager search?
I mean, last year we were asking about Vrabel.
Yeah, who would they send up there?
I don't know. I mean, Burke Nyhill? Yeah. Is he going to get up there?
I don't know.
It's just, it really is. It's enough.
Jeffrey Simmons?
It's enough already. Sure, there you go. Maybe see if
Jeff, what are the qualities you're looking for in your next
Kevin Byard? Can you just speak to what's going on at your former team?
615-737-1025, our phone number. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us coming up next. We'll get into the Titans, all things NFL with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.